Everyone, JJ Cooper, Matt Eddy, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast deep dives today in person. We've got coffee, we've got Mets talk here on the Baseball America Prospect Podcast deep dive. Matt, a fascinating offseason, I feel like, for the Mets. One where they made kind of they kind of slow, fast, ended up making a multitude of moves after a very disappointing, obviously, 2020. And as they head into 2026, it feels like this team is in a different spot than they were at this time last year.
Yeah. Because of the flurry of moves you referenced at the end, trading for Freddy Peralta, trading for Luis Robert Jr., signing Bo Bichette, signing Jorge Polanco. It's a remade roster for 26.
The other thing is obviously that happened over the offseason. The original top 30 that we put at Baseball America, put in the handbook, is no longer that top 30. Now it's a little bit of a different top 30, but still, even after that, one that ranks pretty high up on our organization talent rankings, and one that feels like that this is one of the better Mets farm systems and a different one than we've seen for quite a while.
Yeah, it's the most talented and cohesive since the 2014-2015 group that spawned the pennant winners in 2015. You know, your Jacob deGrom, Noah Syndergaard, you know, Zach Wheeler was a part of that group, a pitching-heavy group, but this is the best it's been in 10, 12 years.
Speaking of pitching, the number one prospect, not a big surprise, Nolan McClain, the number one pitching prospect that we have in the game right now, one of the best prospects as we have him in the game right now, a guy who just barely still qualifies for this list because, obviously, if you're a Mets fan, you saw what he could do. You saw what he did in the big leagues, you know, at the end of the year. To be honest, he's one guy who can say he was not part of the problem for why they didn't make the postseason. He was doing everything he could. I would imagine it was a pretty easy decision, but this is a talented Carson Benj, Jonah Tong. How easy was the decision that McClain was number one?
Yeah, the Major League debut put him at the top. I had already had McClain number one in the summer months. Like him and Benj I viewed as at the top. But McClain's outstanding debut put him over the top. And, you know, he's got athleticism, repertoire. He's got everything you need from like a number two or number three starter.
The other thing we've seen already is this is a pitcher who at his best in the big leagues can dominate, mm-hmm. not just get you through innings, but he's also a lot of times with guys like that early on in their big league careers, they're guys who you're like, okay, but the problem is they're going to try to dominate. They're going to get you four. You're going to try to get them through five. McClain shows that he's got some ability to kind of also be a little bit more efficient than that, I feel like.
Yeah, I think his unpredictability is his weapon. Like he can throw six different pitch types effectively. Great feel for breaking, killing lift and spin on his changeup. Like he has all the raw ingredients you need to be a major league starter.
So you said two though. You said two or three out of one. What is it that kind of, because again, he is our top pitching prospect in the game. We're very reticent. Paul Skenes is the number one. There are number ones out there. Tarek Skubal is the number one, but we never say there are 30 number ones out there. What is it that are the concerns that would probably keep him from maybe being that number one?
Yeah, I think with any young pitcher, command to be a number one starter is always a question until you prove it over 30 starts, over multiple seasons. I also think the raw quality of his four-seamer is not at ace level. His sinker is very good, but I don't think he has I don't mean to diminish Nolan mm-hmm. McClain, but the four-seamer isn't at that level right now.
When you said you came into it, like obviously what he did kind of at the end of the season kind of runs away with it. But I think it's a good chance to talk about Carson Benj because we're going to get into who could be next year's number one and all. Carson Benj isn't going to fit into that discussion. Carson Benj, Jonah Tong is not going to fit into that discussion. These are guys who are going to be in the big. This is one of the reasons that we think that this system is so good right now is because of the number of close to proximity mm-hmm. prospects. This is not a farm system of guys that you hope to see the arrivals in 27, 28, 29. This is a farm system that is very much led by guys who have already been up in a lot of cases, or in Carson's Benj case, is a guy who is very much competing in spring training for a job on, you know, a starting job. With Benj, what did, you know, as you're reporting, what did you see, what did you get feedback on from how he did last year that kind of kept moving him up our top 100 as well?
Yeah, he had one of the bigger rises, like in the minor leagues in general. He went from off our top 100 to firmly top 20. You could argue him up further if you're so inclined, but I think the thing is his pure hitting ability, his ability to do everything well across the board, potentially handle center early in his career at an above average level, but be a no doubt like right field profile.
Did that also, like, we saw the Peralta trade, and in that obviously traded away multiple premium prospects for multiple top 100. We saw Jet Williams and guys like that. I feel like, though, you kind of look at it like take Jet Williams, for example. Not that Jet Williams is not a very useful player. And, Luis Angel Acuna, who, was traded in the Luis Robert trade, who, as we can say, is not a switch hitter. Like, that was kind of definitively not a switch hitter. But what I would say, though, is I feel like in some ways, though, they almost kind of had to make a couple of moves, because if you look at, for instance, between Benj and Williams, and again, when we talk about their infield, because they signed Bichette, so Francisco Lindor, Bo Bichette, there's not a whole lot of room for Jet Williams in the infield in the short term. And then you look in the outfield, and I would say there's not a whole lot of room for him there either, because you probably prefer Benj. You might prefer AJ Ewing because of the pure, as well. I feel like they not only did they get themselves better at the big league level with these moves, but it also was kind of probably something that needed to kind of clear some. You would much rather trade Jet Williams now than a year and a half from now go, oh, he's still in AAA.
Yeah, that's the risk you run with the guys who are good but not elite. You don't want them to stagnate at AAA, and then they become more difficult to trade. I think the other factor is it's one of those baseball dynamic trades where the higher payroll teams rely less on the rookies and young players, but the low payroll teams require them to make they require talented 0-6 players to make the money work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a perfect baseball dynamic trade.
So also with Tong also moved up. Tong was our minor league pitcher of the year last year. Had, I would say, the best season, really one of the best statistical seasons we've seen in the minor leagues, pitching wise, in quite a while. Like, you saw ERA, strikeout rate, opponent's average, all these things. He was basically among minor league leaders in all other than innings pitched in pretty much all these categories. But there is, I think, with him, and you're comparing him to Nolan McLean, the hesitation, not that this, he's an elite prospect, he's in our easily in our top, he's a top 50 prospect, basically, but he does it like if McLean is like, this is the prototype of how you expect to see it, the body, the repertoire, all that. Tong's a little bit, more of kind of like an outlier type guy, is he not?
Yeah, very much so. But right down to the delivery and the like fastball changeup 85% of the time, which is unusual for a right-handed starter in the major leagues. We saw in his brief debut some hit and miss. The fastball wasn't getting chased and swung and missed on as much as the minor leagues. So that's going to be a focus, as will be getting a third pitch in there.
I would say the big thing that I would imagine that you want to see if you're the Mets, if you want to see if you're Tong, is developing some sort of breaking ball. And again, nowadays, this is, I feel like, different than it was 30 years ago, 20 years ago. They're going to lay it. They've got a buffet of breaking balls out there. And it could be a, just the gyro slider work. He is, is it a, sweet? There's a variety of ways you could try.
Which was the strength of the Mets group we mentioned in 2014, the Dan Worthen slider, mm-hmm. essentially just a gyro slider that Syndergaard and DeGrom made famous. So, that potential exists.
But again, he has to have something like that, because the problem is right now, again, it can be effective for him, but it is, if they're not getting chases on that changeup, mm-hmm. then, and if he's not giving hitters in the big leagues a little bit more to worry about other than up, down, up, down, up, down,
yep.
that's where this could be a little bit of a rockier transition over.
Yeah, and to be clear, Tong has shown good spin attributes and good, feel for breaking stuff in the minors. He just, for whatever reason, went away from it last season.
So along those lines, our question that we like to ask in each of these is the system better or worse than it was last year?
Much better. I think the Mets farm is at peak value right now, which implies that the downside next season will not be as rosy, just by the
by
the nature of graduations and maybe further trades.
Right. If Nolan McLean is in your rotation, if Carson Benj is in your outfield, if Jonah Tong's in your rotation, if there could be there are other guys who we could talk about here, like that we will talk about later, Jack Weininger, like guys mm-hmm. like that, like. If you're graduating players who are then young, talented and under team control for years to come, and you go down in the prospect rankings a little bit, okay, that's yay. That's what you want to do.
Yep.
And again, you said trades as well. We talked about it. This has got a lot of at the top, big league ready or knocking on the door. The wave behind that, is there a wave, or is it more like this is going to be a pretty precipitous fall, probably as far as who the premium prospects are?
I think there's a wave of pitchers, and the hitters are to be determined based on how players like Mitch Boyt, the first round pick last year, how Pena, the top IFA last year, how those guys develop this year. I think those, but I think the pitching wave will be not as strong as this one, but will be good.
That sort of thing, I think that's also worth noting here, though, is that we saw at the deadline last year, I felt like that the Mets, obviously, it didn't work out. Like, they traded, and they didn't make the postseason. But while a lot of what they traded is what I would describe as this is not denigrating the prospects, but there are prospects who were not premium players when they came in, and then through development were improved to the point where they had value in trade. I think of an Anthony Nunez, for example, who I do think will be in the Orioles bullpen this year, at points. But Anthony Nunez was not a premium prospect, was one of those rare guys who actually was a drafted player, played as the position player, went back to college to pitch because he was basically, you can do that at D2, and then fashions himself into being a reliever. They traded a number of guys like that where I would say, it's a credit to the organization in some ways to be able to you're not trading your first round picks. You're not trading your top international signing. You're trading guys who you essentially have developed into valuable trade commodities, but that you kind of feel a little bit better about your chance to continually regenerate those if your pitching development's going right.
Yeah. And I think that's a credit to this group, because this is something the Mets were not doing a few years ago. They were not generating, manufacturing that pro value. My hot take, by the way, is I think Nunez is the best player they traded last year.
I'm trying to think. So Nunez, like...
Setting aside the Jet and Strode train.
Right. But, yeah.
I think Nunez is the best.
I'm a Nunez fan, too. I think that's going to be a helpful guy for the Orioles. We just did recorded the deep dive with Mioli, and we talked about him on that one, too.
Yes.
So, okay. Looking, though, if we go to next year, if we look ahead, we know, again, if Nolan McLean hasn't graduated, bad news, Mets fans, because like that means he didn't basically pitch. I would assume, again, Carson Bench is going to graduate, whether he makes the opening day roster or not. I would assume that Jonah Tong is going to graduate.
Yep.
So who are we looking at most likely, or the candidates to be number one a year from now?
Yeah, this is what I mean about peak value. I think by the ranking that we're heading into this year with, A.J. Ewing is next up. He finished at Double-A. I think if he hits a Triple-A this year, I think there's a pretty good chance he'll see some significant major league time. Ryan Clifford, same deal. If he hits, he's got a chance to see major league time. Now it gets tricky to figure these players into a well-paid lineup.
Clifford, like you said, Clifford's one to me. I find it highly unlikely he's going to be a number one a year from now, because there are limitations to him that would also you hope you have someone who might be a little bit higher up. But on top of that, if he does kind of fix some limitations, if he's making solid contact, really hitting for power, he probably graduates. It's like he could graduate, and if he doesn't graduate, he's probably not a number one prospect kind of thing.
Yeah. Jacob Reimer, and then some of the pitchers, the Jack Weininger, the Jonathan Santucci types. But I think you might go Mitch Boyt or Elian Pena if you want like a more of a position dynamic infielder type of number one. It's unlikely to be their top draft pick just because their bonus pool is so low.
And they're drafting late.
Yeah. So I think it's one of the players I just named is most likely.
Pena was an interesting one as you dove into him. Obviously, Josh Norris for us went to the DSL, talked to a lot of people, and there was kind of mixed reviews. He had a great season statistically, but there was kind of some questions about kind of the long-term upside, right? Mm-hmm. What, as you did your reporting, kind of what was the feedback you were getting?
Yeah, there's some skepticism on the body, the ability to hit, stick at shortstop, all of these things that will limit unless he really, really rakes. So those are the concerns you'd have in any young, physically mature player. But if he hits, those things matter a lot less.
Is it crazy? Again, I don't think it'll be next year, but does Wandy Azagin kind of fit into this potentially as well?
Potentially, yes. And he was their top IFA, Dominican shortstop, this year. He might.
I mean,
he would have to have an outstanding DFL season.
Right. Well, I mean, the only reason I bring it up is we have seen some examples in recent years, right, where, for one, like, we are more aggressive about now, like, trying to get as much information as we can. But, like, you look at, again, I'm not saying he's going to do this. Let me be clear. But you look at what, obviously, Jesus Made, Made, a couple of years ago, obviously, Joshua Gonzalez last year. We are seeing some examples of guys who, if you set that on fire, if you then get that late kind of brought to the U.S., you start fitting into there's a little bit more comfort level now. We have a little bit more information now. Like, the way I would put it is DSL statistics are things that are not all that useful. We know that the caliber of competition can vary pretty dramatically, the caliber of pitching that you're facing or hitting, vice versa. But there are now things, we've talked about this in other stories at Baseball America, like, if you understand the zone, like, it's one thing to say he's got a high OBP, but it's like, okay, well, how much is he swinging at pitches in the zone versus swinging at pitches outside of the zone, which is demonstrating zone awareness, I feel like, and that can be measured now for teams in a way that it couldn't, where it's like, it's not just a high walk rate. If you're just holding the bat on your shoulder in the DSL, you could probably get to a 350 OBP, but are you then swinging at the pitches that you can do damage to that are, hey, I got a strike, I'm going to do something with it. Those kind of things now, I feel like we have a little bit more comfort level with than we did 10 years ago. That's maybe why.
That's fair. And if he projects as a no doubt shortstop, then, stock was up.
So I did want to talk about Reimer a little bit too, because he's another guy who I feel like kind of did have a nice kind of emergent season last year.
Yes.
The bat was really good last year. How much is his development, is the question going to be about where he ends up defensively? Like, is that a viable long-term, or is there still some questions about that?
There's still questions, but I think we see third base, anecdotally, third base to me is one of those positions where players improve a lot in pro ball, and even as they move level to level. So I don't think he's at a point where you're comfortable, or at least at the end of last season, I don't think he was at a point where you feel comfortable that that's his future for sure, but it's possible that he could get there. And then late in the year, they were playing him more at first base, for what that's worth.
And that, so that's obviously could be a long-term. And that he has the bat where maybe that is big enough to do that. Although, again, we said there's battles there, because even on the developmental side, you've got him, you've got Clifford, who could be in the first base as well. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about Weininger and Santucci, but I think I'll ask you this question first, and this will kind of tee that up, which is, what is this organization good at developing?
Well, over the past few years, pitching, without a doubt. The 2023 draft group, you got Brandon Sproat, they've already used in a trade. Nolan McLean, Zach Thornton, and Jack Weininger are legitimate prospects. And those guys were later, three, four, five round guys. They got Cade Morris, they traded. And then last year, Jonathan Santucci, Will Watson, and RJ Gordon, 2024 draft picks, all of them finished at AA. In 25 on the Eastern League Championship rotation. So those guys came a long way in a short time.
What is it with the pitching? What is it that they seem to be identifying that allows them? Again, because you said Nolan McLean, great success story. Kudos. Two-way guy in college, loved to be a two-way guy. Did hit even pro ball, mm-hmm. but then seemed to find another gear when he just focused on pitching. But again, that was a guy who everyone was seeing Nolan McLean. But as you said, there's some guys here that are a little bit more kind of diamonds in the rough, and the Mets seem to be able to identify some characteristics that fit with their ability to develop.
Yeah, I think it's integrating player development into the draft process to a degree, drafting guys they know they can develop. I think they're also really good at bringing along velocity and identifying the breaking ball shapes that they think can work. I think they as an organization, really target year three to kind of see these players blossom. That's when McLean, in his third pro year, blossomed, for instance. So I think that's, as you're looking at when these guys might be peak value, I think you start looking at year three.
So, okay. So we have some guys who are kind of nearing year three here. So that'll be interesting to watch in 2026. Again, that 2024 draft, Is that what you're talking about by year three? Is yeah. So 24, 25, 26?
So, yeah, and that's the Tucci, Watson, and then to a lesser degree, R.J. Gordon group that I referenced. And also Ryan Lambert, the reliever, is in that group as well.
And it's also worth noting, though, that, like, okay, they've done college guys, but then they've done it with high school guys, you know, like Tong as well. So it's been a little bit of both.
Well, yeah, historically, they haven't drafted a lot of high school arms. And Tong signed for slot value, but they violated that a little bit in the last draft when they Peter Cusso and Camden Lohman, et cetera. They gave went over slot to sign. So we'll see how that progresses because there's no precedent for that.
What about on the hitting side? What are they? Are there some characteristics here that jump out?
Not as much. I think they're good at helping players lean into their best attributes. I mean, we saw that a little bit in 24 with Mark Vientos leaning into his power. He really took off for one season. But, you know, AJ Ewing had his best year by focusing more on contact and angles and kind of leveling out his swing. He still has the EV to hit for power. He just didn't show it as much last year. And then helping Clifford and Reimer, you know, maximize their power potential.
So on the video side, this is kind of the end of the pod. But if you are on the podcast side, we are going to continue and we'll be talking about sleepers, guys outside the top 10, right after this quick break. And we're back. So, Matt, looking outside the top 10, who are some other names to know? Like I said, this is still, that top 10 is full of guys who, these are names to know partly because they're going to be, some of these guys are going to be top 10 guys this year because we expect a lot of these guys at the top of the top 10 to graduate.
Yes. I think that the pitchers at the next group who are most exciting to me are Zach Thornton, the lefty from Grand Canyon, and Will Watson, right-hander from USC. Both do it differently. Thornton's more of a command and wide repertoire guy, but they've coaxed a lot of velo and effectiveness out of him. He's interesting. Watson, great fastball, good changeup. Some relief risk because he doesn't have the outstanding pitch, but great arm. Could see him in the majors this year if everything goes right. Wandy Segan, we mentioned, the Dominican shortstop. And one of the most fun players is Randy Guzman, who is Ronald Guzman's younger brother.
Could be younger brother.
Crazy power. Kind of came out of nowhere after two poor DSL seasons. So we don't know to what extent what he showed late last year was legitimate, but he has a carrying tool. And if he continues to hit.
The other thing that when I look at this big picture, we know that the Mets just opened up a upgraded spring training facility on the minor league side. Like there is a real intention here that's been there for a little while as far as they want to kind of, again, there is this approach of being Dodgers-like. And I mean that from a standpoint of they're a large revenue team. They have they don't have fiscal limitations because their owner who really wants to be good, but it's not a only major league side approach. It is something where we talked about that this is an improved farm system. This is also kind of when you bring over like, their model, this is kind of, it's a different group, but David Stearns, the Brewers model, David Stearns came from a resource limited team and had kind of the knowledge and understanding of how to try to continue to contend, compete, knowing that they weren't going to be a major free agent player, knowing that they were going to have to figure out ways to replace players, to sometimes move on from players to say, this guy's still good, but we can get value for him and we can find someone to replace him. I think that's really interesting for the Mets here from a standpoint of, this is the team that you just laid out, that they signed Bo Bichette to a massive deal. They traded for Freddy Peralta. They brought in Luis Robert. There was a number of guys who they made moves to bring in who are big league vets, but it's also not a, we just go after veterans. We just fill out holes from free agent market. It's a blend where even when they see someone like Pete Alonso leave, it's not something where they say, oh, we're just immediately going to go out there and spin big to replace him. Mm-hmm. It kind of is also a little bit of what opportunities, what players do we have here who might be able to fill those holes, which creates a little bit of a balance, I feel, to it.
Yeah, and this is new under David Stearns. The Mets, prior to this, setting aside the Alderson era that we talked about earlier, really lack that discipline, that strategy, that cohesion, which I think Stearns has brought to the organization. So I think that's where the Dodgers reference would be apt, though they don't have the major league success.
As a again
to this point.
Although I will say, like, if you said even in the Andrew Friedman era, this was the point at which with the Dodgers we were saying, "Wow, they win the division every year. Congratulations to them." But when are they going to get over that, you know, that World Series, hurdle? Not a problem now with the Dodgers.
No,
as 29 fan bases will tell you. But I do look at it and say, okay, there is. That's where I find this really intriguing, really interesting. Is there does feel like that this is a team that's kind of aiming for more of consistency rather than, hey, we're going to, it's all, you know, we're going to be able to make a push to make a run this year. Mm-hmm. It's more of the developing kind of a sustainable base. And there's going to be some ups and downs with it. Like, I mean, look, I don't want to be all, you know, flowers and roses here. Like, their inability to add more starting pitching at the deadline last year probably cost them a spot in the playoffs. I mean, when you finish that close, mm-hmm. you have to go back and look and say, should we have done more? But I also look at it and say, long term with this team, filtering in the McClains, filtering in the Carson Benjes, in addition to bringing in a Bo Bichette, bringing in a Freddie Peralta, like, there is a balance here where it's like, you know, again, we'll see. I feel like we're still waiting to see, like, okay, you know, obviously Francisco Alvarez is part of this. You know, it's still Vientos and Brett Beatty, like, and seeing what they can do. And it's a little bit of a mix of they want to go out and bring in big guys who can help, but they're also, there is opportunities here. This is not something we see this with the Dodgers right now. Like, Michael Busch could just sit there toiling away for years in AAA, and it's like, sorry, dude. There's when we need a first baseman, we're gonna go get Freddie Freeman, not just say you get the job. The Mets, it's a little bit more of, if you're a premium prospect, I feel like there's a little bit more chance right now that you will be the guy who's kind of handed the keys and see what you can do.
Yeah, they made a point of carving out a role for Benj in particular, and, you know, McClain obviously earned a spot last year, but I think it's not totally uncommon, but it's unusual for a higher payroll team to say, here, we want this rookie, we're clearing the path, and this is your role.
Right, and they didn't really backstop him much either.
Not really, no.
I mean, this is kind of...
I think Mike Tauchman is in camp. I think there's some other players like that.
Sure, there are guys who you could, but not like... But again, like, I would say that in a lot of cases, to give the Dodgers example, it's like, hey, we're going to bring in Michael Conforto on a one-year deal. Hey, we're bringing back Teo Hernandez on, you know, and Dalton Rushing is like his path, which I know he didn't have a great debut last year, but is like, do you want to be a backup catcher for us? It's not something where you're saying like Benji or McClain. I feel like Jonah Tong has a real opportunity. This is not something where you look at it and say, Tong's going to have to really scrap to get starts in the big leagues this year. There's going to be starts for him.
Yeah. And don't forget, he had like 2 AAA starts last year. He was very young. So I think
him going back to AAA throughout the year, fine.
I think half a year at AAA and then half a year in the majors is completely, would be on brand. Yeah.
I do feel like, again, it'll be interesting to see. The other thing we just talked about there is it's also a team that's making splashes in the international market. It was Pena, mm-hmm. now it's Astegen. You know, this is the team that is really trying to do the all of the above approach, I would say.
And they need that. The Mets need the international market revitalized because, you know, they had a period where they had Ahmed Rosario, Ronnie Mauricio, Francisco Alvarez. They had all these guys right in succession. They haven't had a big hit now since Alvarez came up.
And that's been a couple of years now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, that is our Baseball America New York Mets Prospect Podcast Deep Dive. We are almost done with these. We are We are basically sliding into home. If you haven't seen, if you've listened to this because you follow prospects, but you're like, wait, I haven't seen or listened to the podcast for my favorite team, check it out. We probably have it there. I believe we have Nationals and Angels left to go, and then we will be done with these. So we are almost there. For Matt, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.